30 years after the publication of Wealth and Poverty, shaken by a global financial fiasco, I find myself buckling down to engage once again these central themes of human life and economics. Back during the tempestuous late years of the 1970s, with President Jimmy Carter waving limp white flags of national malaise, with hostages still held in Tehran, petroleum and gold prices shrilling doom-laden alarms, U.S. banks gasping for capital down a ferociously inverted yield curve, borrowing dear in short-term markets and lending low in long-term bonds and mortgages, with the Soviet Union battening rich on oil wealth, and John Kenneth Galbraith joining the CIA and claiming the robustness and fast growth of the astonishing Soviet economy, I declared that socialism was dead. This fact, I acknowledged, remained unrequited by a comparable triumph of capitalism. Even Irving Kristol, then the most eloquent and sophisticated defender of enterprise, could only muster 2 cheers for capitalism. Wealth and Poverty was in good part an answer to Kristol, offering a full-throated 3 cheers and an elaborate supply-side rationale that Kristol also helped articulate. Capitalism, I wrote, was not simply a practical success, a worst of all systems except for the rest of them, a faute de mieux compromise redeemed by charities and regulators and proverbially saved by the New Deal. It is the supreme expression of human creativity and freedom, an economy of mind overcoming the constraints of material power. It is a dynamic force of constant creation, pushing human enterprise down spirals of declining costs and greater abundance. In a central insight, shared by my supply-side brethren, Wealth and Poverty saw taxes as a crucial price, the price of earning and investing income, that yielded increasing revenues as the rates were reduced. The source of the rising revenues has remained controversial even among supply-siders. Some implicitly accept the behavioral dream of a Skinner box economics of stimulus and response, in which lower rates impart a stimulus of reward for more work and risk-taking, yielding more revenues for the government. A successful economy, however, is driven less by the sharp edge of incentives than by the unimpeded flow of information. Capitalism is more an information system than an incentive system. Increasing revenues come not from a mere scheme of carrots and sticks, but from the development and application of productive knowledge. By focusing on incentives rather than on information, free market economists have encouraged the idea that capitalism is based on greed. But greed, in fact, prompts capitalists to seek government guarantees and subsidies that denature and stultify the works of entrepreneurs. Greed, as I put it in Wealth and Poverty, leads, as by an invisible hand, to an ever-growing welfare state, to socialism. It is not the enlargement of incentives and rewards that generates growth and progress, profits for the entrepreneur and revenues for the government, but the expansion of information and knowledge. The competitive pursuit of knowledge is not a dog-eat-dog Darwinian struggle. In capitalism, the winners do not eat the losers, but teach them how to win through the spread of information. Far from a zero-sum game where the successes of some come at the expense of others, free economies climb spirals of mutual gain and learning. Far from a system of greed, capitalism depends on a golden rule of enterprise. The good fortune of others is also your own. Applying to both domestic and international trade and commerce, this golden rule is the moral center of the system. Not only does capitalism excel all other systems in the creation of wealth and transcendence of poverty, it also favors and empowers a moral order. One of my inspirational sources was Richard Posner, then a professor of law and economics at the University of Chicago. I quoted him to the effect, then still inchoate in my mind but soon to pervade the book, that capitalism is inherently favorable to altruism, an orientation toward the needs of others. He wrote, "Because the individual cannot prosper in a market economy without understanding and appealing to the needs and wants of others, And because the cultivation of altruism promotes the effective operation of markets, the market economy also fosters empathy and benevolence, yet without destroying individuality.